You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
This week marked the end of an era for Libya. Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's convoy was bombed by NATO planes as he tried to avoid capture. He was subsequently caught and it apparently seems murdered by troops of the new Libyan government. This may be the end of an era, but what was the beginning of the era and what was its trajectory? To discuss these events, we're joined on the phone by Vijay Prajad, who has written extensively on Libya. He's a professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, and he has an upcoming book titled April Arab Spring, Libyan Winter, and that's due out in the coming April. He joins me now on the phone. Hello, Vijay, and thank you for taking our call.
No, thank you so much.
Let's start at the beginning. What kind of a society was Libya when Gaddafi first came to power?
Well, one way to put this in context is that the main export out of Libya in 1969 was not oil, but scrap metal. And it was scrap metal largely because of the detritus of the Rommel's Africa Corps and Montgomery's tanks that littered North Africa, particularly Libya, where two important battles had been fought, one at Tobruk and the other just outside Benghazi. So Libya was a very poor country. It had been turned over to a monarchy, to King Idris II after World War II. And it had been destroyed. It was a society that was in real disrepair, largely under the capture of various tribal interests, but also very much under the capture of an emergent relationship between the king and various powers, including the United States, which had a major base just outside Tripoli, the Wheelers Air Base. So Libya, when Gaddafi took over in 1969, did not defend King Idris. It actually welcomed Gaddafi's revolution.
Now, Gaddafi has gone through various cycles of image presentation in the imperial world, in the United States, in Europe, from being a terror to being a good guy, bad guy, good guy. Could you maybe outline some of the phases of his own policies through the period after 1969 up to the present?
Well, there is one very clear, unambiguous phase, and that is the phase from 1969 to the late 1980s. In that period, Gaddafi typically took a position hostile to the various imperial powers on the world stage and regarding Libyan relations. Oil was discovered in Libya just before the revolution of 69. Oil was very well developed into the early 70s, and then Gaddafi expelled the oil companies, many of them American firms, but also Italian firms. And this was very popular inside Libya, but it had the cost that he had to pay from pressure from outside. So between 69 and 88 or thereabouts, Gaddafi had expropriated the means of wealth and had begun to turn over quite a bit of the social wealth in those early years to the population by creating a very reasonable access to education, healthcare, some kind of transportation. And in that period, actually, it was through that transfer of payments to the population that a certain idea of being Libyan was created. You saw for the first time Libyans from, say, the eastern part going to study in Tripoli and, bureaucrats moving across the country. So a new national consciousness was certainly born in those 20 years. The big thing that Gaddafi did not do in those 20 years was deepen democratization in any conventional way. He had his own ideas of democracy, but unfortunately, he had the ability in a way to centralize power among himself and his so-called men of the tent, even though he did it in the name of democratization. or decentralization. So the great failure of Gaddafi, even in the first 20 years, was to somehow create institutions where people could get their voice heard. He governed in the name of the people, but he didn't really create institutions for them to participate fully in decision-making.
But after 1988, does he enter on a phase of collaboration with foreign imperial powers, and particularly the economic policy of neoliberalism?
Well, after 88, you know, by the late 80s, Libya has entered a sanctions period. It is in a great economic crisis. And many different approaches were presented to Gaddafi, but the one that most appealed to him was to somehow get rid of the sanctions regime, to make a deal, make a kind of a bargain with Europe and the United States. And so from the mid-1980s onward, Gaddafi will send some of his most accomplished bureaucrats and diplomats, people like Moussa Koussa, who defected during this war in 2011. Moussa Koussa will travel around the capitals of Europe and into the United States and essentially starts to promise blood money, payment for Lockerbie, payment for a French jet that was shot down in Chad. And as before that, Libya was happy to renegotiate oil contracts. And very quickly, in the 1990s, Gaddafi is going to utterly quit and begin to privatize some of the 11,000 firms inside Libya. You know, his son Saif al-Islam will come into his own by the early 2000s. And he will start to bring in people from McKinsey and Company, from Goldman Sachs. One Goldman Sachs executive who comes and tries to turn around, as it were, the central bank. It was Mr. Ben Halim, who was the son of the last prime minister of Libya under King Idris II. So this is a restoration of power to the Libyan diaspora, the technocrats among them. And, the most important figure here is a man by the name of Mahmoud Jibril, who is now the Prime Minister of Libya. So Mr. Jibril returns from the diaspora. He had been helping the Qatari oil family, the Qatari ruling family, manage their money. And so Mr. Jibril returns in 2006, collaborates with Saif al-Islam. They try to fully neoliberalize Libya. What they are interested in is to make what they call jokingly Dubai on the Mediterranean. And there were some problems inside their attempt at creating this Dubai. And in 2010, one of the important figures of this clique around Saif al-Islam Gaddafi went to the U.S. Embassy, where he informed the ambassador that the only way to move our agenda forward is to get rid of Gaddafi. Why? Because Gaddafi just gets in the way. In other words, Gaddafi was being held back by some elements in the ruling elite, some people who had not necessarily any ideological affinity to the 1969 revolution, but they were nervous about who was beginning to take control. So Gaddafi was trying to manage a power struggle, and this side essentially wanted the power struggle resolved on their behalf. When the rebellion broke out, it was an authentic rebellion, when it broke out in February of 2011, these elements very quickly came in and hijacked it politically, and NATO gave them, in a sense, Libya on a plate.
I would just like your comments, and we have little time left, but on what is the consequence do you see now of the murder of Gaddafi and the coming to power of people who wanted him out of the way before in Libya, but who were closely allied with Western interests?
Well, history will tell us that nothing happens without contradictions. So it's not like the neoliberal clique around Mahmoud Jibril have inherited a country and there'll be no problems. I mean, one of the big alliances that Jibril made was with the Islamists, and that was an alliance they forged only in this war. The Islamists broke out through their rebellion in 1996 and have been growing in strength. You know, the boogie of Al-Qaeda is not to make sense here. This is an indigenous, different kind of Islamism. At any rate, they are not in favor of Jibril's kind of politics. So there is going to be a new contradiction between the neoliberals, who are going to be European-style Democrats, and the Islamists, who want a different kind of regime. That's one big contradiction, and that's going to come out in a disturbing way. During this war, the various factions of the various cities refused to put their forces under common command. So they remain essentially as the fighters of Misrata, the fighters of Benghazi, the fighters of Ashtabiha, and they are all armed and under separate command. So as those contradictions start to come out, these separate armed factions who are refusing to disband and come under one military command might break Libya immediately into civil war. And that would be catastrophic. That is nothing. Even the greatest critic of imperialism should not welcome civil war in Libya. We saw what happened in Afghanistan after 1996 when the regime of Najibullah was overthrown, and that country was tormented in a three-year civil war until the Taliban came in. So, you know, one should not welcome a civil war. We should be calling immediately for reconciliation with all factions, including people who are hardened Gaddafi supporters, and we should be warning against any escalation of violence in Libya. You know, one of the things that you and I can do in Canada is fight against a NATO permanent presence in Libya, including, say, an American base which will house America's African command. That will also intensify violence in the region. That region doesn't deserve it.
Well, thank you very much for, I know a short time, but you've given a great deal of insight to us for the developments historically and in the contemporary setting. Thank you again, Vijay.
My pleasure. Take care of yourself.
I've been speaking with Vijay Prashad. He's an author, professor of international studies at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. And we look forward to his upcoming book. It's titled Arab Spring, Libyan Winter, and it's due out in April.